And welcome again to the new season of Brew Crew Online. I am Benjamin Orr.
And I'm Colin Bennis.
And while the season has begun and is underway now, sure, the Brewers are 1-2, and, you know, sure, the pitching imploded a little bit, but hey, it's three games in. We got 159 more to go.
The sky is not falling yet, folks.
No, and I mean, even though the Brewers' pitching really did get battered, you know, I think, what did they give up, like six home runs? In the three, it was something ridiculous like that.
Eight home runs.
And
40-some hits.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, that's not really good. Gallardo and Estrada didn't really last that long as we had hoped. Axford got a little bit beaten up. But there are positives in this. You know, Alfredo Figueroa looked really good. And the Brewers can look forward to tomorrow when they get to see the newly signed Kyle Loesch pitch for them. So, I mean, there are positives out of this. And
I mean, some teams just get off to a hot start. And a team like Colorado right now, like we were talking earlier, with that lineup, it reminds me a little bit of the 2008 Brewers, where you have just that tendency to just explode into any game offensively. Pitching-wise, they're not great, but if they can get the better of the other team's offense, I mean, it's only a matter of time until Colorado just jumps out into a lead like they did. So, I mean, I don't want to say that people seriously underestimated the Rockies. I think we sure did as a fan base. But I think, you know, to the Brewers' credit, it's not as if we got completely blown out of those games, you know? We hung in, for the most part, we hung in all three of those games until the ninth inning in, certainly the ninth inning of the third game.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a lineup, Colorado's in particular, that it's not the easiest to pitch to, like you said. You look at where Colorado ranked a lot last year, and they were top five in runs scored, RBIs, average. They were top five in a lot of categories. And you just look up and down this lineup. You got Tulo, you have Cargo, you have Michael Kadire, Dexter Fowler, Todd Helton. And then you have the rookies last year in Willen Rosario, Jordan Pacheco, and Josh Rutledge. I mean, this is a really good team. And it's just, if they can figure out their pitching, I mean, they've been trying to do that a little bit. They got Chris Bolstad, maybe thinking he might pitch some long relief in there, maybe an occasional starter too. They got John Garland. They're hoping that Juan Nicasio can turn it around, and Jeff Francis, and Jorge De La Rosa, because he was doing pretty good until he went on the disabled list and had, I believe, Tommy John. Rex Brothers did really good in the bullpen for them. Rafael Benincourt, 31 saves last year. So this is a Rockies team that if you give them a little bit more in pitching and they turn that around, they're going to make a serious, I don't want to say a serious run in the NL West, but they're going to get noticed.
Yeah, and, you know, on that, I mean, you look at the situations for the pitchers in the series, and I mean, there were more situations for the Rockies relievers where all they had to do was keep the ball down, and they're going to be just fine with that. You know, with their offense, you get in that rhythm where you know your offense is going to carry you. And then the only thing the pitcher has to do is just throw strikes, you know. Don't walk batters, and everything else is going to fall into place, especially with that Rockies defense, which has always been pretty good. And whereas, you know, the Brewers were coming in, the pitchers were playing from behind, the offense was a little bit stagnant, then a pitcher feels like they have to start throwing perfect innings, which is just impossible. And it's a little bit easier for the opponent to start capitalizing on mistakes, especially when you're leaving runners stranded on the bases in terms of the Brewers. You know, we saw a lot of over-eagerness on the base paths for the Brewers as well, which is just wasted opportunities at that point. And, you know, starters that were not up to par. And some of that probably has to do with the fact that they had to get ready for the World Baseball Classic, and so their rhythm might be a little bit off. I don't want to use that as an excuse necessarily, but it's not thoroughly uncommon for people that have had to pitch in the World Baseball Classic in this first week of baseball. We've seen it all over the league. So,
and you bring up the point of the Brewers really being over-aggressive on the bases. And we saw that last night when I believe it was I can't remember who hit the ball, but Braun ended up scoring. And Ramirez was going for the plate and got tagged out. Now, if Ramirez would have held at third, you know, Braun would have still scored, and the Brewers would have been down only 4-3 at that point with a chance to get more runners in with two guys on.
Right.
Now, that, you know, opportunities like that are ones you go, yeah, you know, that was stupid. But later on down the road, it's going to be those one or two mistakes that might hurt a little bit. And, you know, it's early in the season. It's nothing to really be that concerned about. But those aren't mistakes you really want to see, especially from veteran players.
And, well, right. And we saw it in opening day, too, with, I mean, Ricky gets a nice shot into shallow left. And, I mean, really more of a bleeder than anything else. And he tries to stretch it into a double. And now Ricky's got decent speed, but not as good as he did, say, 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, the arms in that outfield are just, they're incredible. So to try to stretch a ground ball into a double is just, I mean, it looked amateurish to put it as blunt as possible. Lucroy getting caught way too far off second. It's stuff that you don't expect to see from professional ball players.
Yeah, you know, and it's easy for us to say that being fans of the game and being just, you know, critics and observers. But, you know, they've been playing this game for quite some time now, you know, Weeks and Ramirez in particular, and even Lucroy for a little bit. So, I mean, obviously they know what their strengths are, they know what their weaknesses are. But it's just simple base running when you realize that you're not going to make it somewhere and you just go, okay, yeah, overran second by about, you know, 30 feet.
Right.
And then you're like, well, I have to get back now, and then they tag you out. I mean, then you wonder why, oh, gee, because I overran. And, I mean, it happens, you know.
Right.
Nobody's perfect, and that's – and it's baseball.
You know, but you look at situations like that, and, I mean, the Brewers, to their credit, did a great job of getting – two out hits and two out RBIs in this series, which is very encouraging going down the stretch. Their approach with two outs at the plate has been phenomenal, and their discipline this year seems a lot better at the plate, at least in early days. But, you know, you look at some of those mistakes and you start counting them up, and it's like, okay, we could have had a guy on second with one out there, but instead we have nobody on base with two outs now. You know, we had a guy on second with one out, and then all of a sudden it turns into the end of the inning, and you have no chance to score. To us, it's like, yeah, we can brush those mistakes off. They're professionals. They're going to get it right. But at the same time, I mean, it's those little moments in the game that not only affect the offense, but also give a big boost to that opposing pitcher, who all of a sudden gets out of that great jam. You know, his pitch count can stay down now. He can go an extra inning, and he's got his nerves back. It's those little, like, momentum and rhythm and attitude things, it's easy for us to throw off. But when you're a major league pitcher, when you're a major league ball player, those things do matter.
Yeah, and you look at this series in particular. The Brewers had 21 people overall in the series left on base. And those are mistakes that, you know, obviously or hopefully will be ironed out with how solid, really, a lineup that Milwaukee has. I mean, I'm not too concerned about where the team stands right now. Obviously, it's very early. But you like to see some of the guys are off to a really good start right now. I mean, Ramos Ramirez right now is batting .364. No home runs yet, 2 RBIs, but then you have Braun batting .400, home run, 4 RBIs. So, I mean, these guys are starting to warm up more. Maybe that's due to maybe an extra spring training because they started about a week or two earlier due to the World Baseball Classic. And Ramos Ramirez in particular, who's a very, very notorious slow starter, hopefully this can continue for him. But, I mean, Braun is to be expected. Weeks is batting .545. So
Weeks in particular, I'm very happy to see Gene Segura as well having a good start to the season. Although his placement at the bottom of the lineup puts him in a tough position strategically. You know, with the pitcher batting behind him, not going to get a lot of great opportunities there.
Well, I mean, Peralta did get a hit last night, so
yeah, Estrada got a hit too. So
And it's just, I mean, there's no reason to be concerned or, oh my God, you know, this team is awful. Let's go bandwagon the, you know, Los Angeles Dodgers now. I mean, it's not to that point. It should never be to that point if you're a true Brewers fan.
Right.
But no, I mean, you look at some of the things that happened in the series, and you look at the pitching. Like, you know, Gallardo goes 5 innings, lost 3 runs. Estrada goes 5 innings, lost 4 runs. Peralta goes 5 1/3 innings, lost 4 runs. So clearly the starting pitching, like you said earlier, was really off to this really weird start. And that very well might be to the fact that basically the three of them had to prepare a lot earlier for getting ready to start regularly in baseball due to the World Baseball Classic. And, you know, the bullpen's really been able to get them out of some jams. Obviously, Michael Gonzalez has had some issues. John Axford's had some issues. But Badenhop's look good. Figueroa's look good. Henderson's look good. Even Narvison in relief has looked really well. But I don't think, obviously, you know, you need to hit the panic button right now. But, you know, starting pitching-wise, it's not... I think it's not where a lot of people thought it would be. They thought maybe it would do a little bit better, but that's why you have this experiment phase right now. We have Peralta as 3, and you know, Loesch is obviously going to be pushed up forward into this rotation at some point. So
right.
It's just kind of this weird transition phase because this is, like we've said before, a very young rotation. And by young, I mean experience-wise. I don't necessarily mean age, because they're not used to starting all the time. You know, Gallardo is, Loesch is, the rest of them aren't. So it's really kind of a new phase for not only the Brewers, but Brewers fans in general.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's going to take some time to get from, you know, where we want the pitching to be to where it is now. And a lot of what happened to the starting pitching, and specifically what happened to the relief pitching, is something that's not going to happen every single outing. You know, especially that second game against the Rockies, a lot of bloops, a lot of bleeders, a lot of weird occurrences, specifically the broken bat that tried to murder Alex Gonzalez. There was no question that that bat had evil intentions in mind.
But, oh, good. Was sent from St. Louis.
Yeah, but you know, that's not going to happen every time, and it's tough for a fan to recognize bad breaks when they happen. And we got the business end of a lot of bad breaks and a lot of silly mistakes too. But in my mind, these are things that are going to, over the course of the season, are going to even out and are going to go our way as much as they go anyone else's way.
Yeah, and, you know, the biggest thing that a lot of people, and, you know, obviously it's very premature, but a lot of people that have been on the Brewers in previous years and in spring training, and now they certainly haven't gone away, have really been on John Axford's case. And, yeah, he's, you know, really kind of in this midst of trying to get over the struggles he had from last year and into this year. Really trying to transition himself as a reliever, because 1 year we saw a really good year out of him. The next year we saw a year in which he gave up the home run ball a little bit more than he would have liked. But, you know, obviously you can't judge how he's going to do based on really 2 outings. And
right. It's
just ridiculous. All the people are saying, you know, they should release him, they should trade him, they should just get rid of him in general. And no, I mean, who are you going to put in as the closer? I mean, he is the closer in my mind going forward.
Yeah, I don't think there's a question about that. The response that I saw amongst my Facebook friends, Twitter followers, commenters on the internet, which, by the way, just a horrible thing to use as a barometer for how people feel. literally, just awful. Don't ever do it. Looking at that, I mean, it's just... I mean, it's pure overreaction in the first part. Part of it is, you know, a lack of understanding of the situations of the game, and just frustration, which obviously all those things are, I mean, you're allowed to have those feelings as a fan, certainly. But, you know, it's a long season, and we're talking about 2 games, 2 innings, really, one where X was just, I mean, looked even better than he did in 2011, honestly. And then Dexter Fowler was sitting high fastball, and that's what he got. I mean, sometimes that's going to happen. You're not going to be able to trick every batter. And especially in a park like Miller Park, you get a good swing on that ball. Park factors for Miller Park generally even out in terms of whether it, you know, whether it's advantage pitcher or advantage hitter. But, I mean, there's no question you get a good swing on that ball, and it can go for miles in that park. So I'm not thoroughly concerned, especially when you have a power-heavy lineup like Colorado. Those types of things are going to happen. But, you know, like we were talking earlier, especially for Axford, his breaking stuff looks awesome. If he can get his velocity back up, if he can get his release points back, it's going to be an amazing year for him. And, you know, it's possible that maybe a couple games of middle relief might work okay for Axford. Maybe a couple days off where he can just, you know, take some time throwing from the pen might help. He's in much more capable hands than our speculative opinions, so I trust that he's going to work it out. But you know, there's room to be concerned there, but also beginning of the season against the Colorado Rockies, I don't know if we have to, you know, throw our hands up and call it quits.
Yeah, and it's not like Axford is running into these scenarios, you know, completely blind to what's going on, completely just unable to pitch, because it's not like he's running into this and saying, oh, I'm going to walk these people. He hasn't even walked anybody yet. And you look at, like, especially in Monday's game, when he gave up that one home run to Dexter Fowler, he only faced four batters, Dexter Fowler just having to be one of those four that extended the inning. And, I mean, he struck out three, he only allowed that one hit, that's all he did. And, I mean,
right.
even like at last night, he faced a total of seven batters before he got pulled. He only pitched 18 pitches, whereas the night before, or the 2 nights before, he pitched 17. So it's not like he's setting himself up to load the bases, or to walk people, or to not fight batters. He is. He's just locating the ball where these guys' wheelhouses are. And like you said, with more potent lineups like Colorado, it's not really that big of a surprise. Yeah, we would like to see him shut them down, but if they hit a home run or two off of them, it's not like it's not to be expected. It's not like it's the Houston Astros here.
Right. And, you know, not every single series is going to end up this way. I mean, the Diamondbacks coming into Miller Park is probably going to bode a little bit better for the Brewers than, you know, that Rockies lineup is. I mean, obviously there are still questions with pitching there. We have Loesch and Fiers going up in that series. And I don't remember who's pitching Sunday, but
probably Gallardo.
Yeah, that makes sense. it's been a long 3 days already, that's for sure.
I hear you.
But, you know, and again, a lot of this is we want to project out from the first three games to say this is how the season's going to go. And, I mean, those kind of projections rarely, if ever, turn out to be correct. So I think, you know, this whole month of, like, April is you kind of start to get a feel of how your team's doing. And there are spots to be worried about, and there are spots to be, you know, very optimistic about. But three games does not make a trend.
No. Just real quick here, kind of off note, because Colin and I were talking about this before the podcast. See, I'm already in full baseball mode. We were talking about the Cubs and Pirates, and the Cubs had a 3-0 lead on the Pirates. They just won 3-2. Now, you want to talk about a reliever who has struggles. That's Carlos Marmol. The Cubs went out preseason and got rights and signed a contract with Kyoji Fujikawa from Japan, who is basically kind of like the Mariano Rivera, Trevor Hoffman of Japan. Came over here, and they used him for the 8th inning instead of the 9th. And Carlos Marmol came in for the 9th and gave up 2 runs with 3 hits and walked 1 while striking out 1.
Oh.
That is an example of a reliever who just does not have it.
Right. And this is it's no secret, the struggles that Marmol's had. And to be honest, and I've been talking to some other people about this, specifically some of the guys over at Disciples of Euchre, about the way that we form bullpens in general, and essentially what a save is. And really, more than anything, we've turned the save into something I think probably more than it's actually worth. In terms of the amount of pressure, the amount of perceived leverage we put on the situation, and the actual roles of what a short reliever is. And you think about some of these guys like Axford and Marmol and other people that would probably do just as well in a long relief role or a middle relief role. But because we've over-specialized, pitching stabs in general, it tends to almost make them easier to get battered, because there's less of a, in terms of their mechanics, in terms of the way they attack hitters, and in terms of the way they go about their pitching, it fundamentally changes the relationship of the game for them. And I think we're seeing that a lot more lately, that over specialization leads to, more flameouts for closers, more inconsistency in what a closer can do, and in general gives it more of an advantage almost to an offense.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like we can really predict what's going to happen, because face it, baseball, you can't predict what is going to happen. That's just one of the most unpredictable things in life. But you can kind of control it. And like you said, it's a lot of applied pressure in these situations that really doesn't really need to be there. Obviously, the game's getting shorter, and there's less of a chance for a team to come back or a team to hold a lead. But, as Yogi Berra said, like 90% of the game,
90% of the game is
half mental or something. Yeah. And, it's true to a degree, because you put this pressure on guys like Marmol, like Axford, and like really any reliever. And people think that, they come in and pitch one pitch, or they pitch just, two-thirds of an inning. Yeah, but, they come into this game with no rhythm of how it's going, sort of really mentally cold to the game, and you have to put them in this role. And, yeah, a lot of guys can break the nerves from that. But if we take the Brewers bullpen last year. If you take a bullpen that just cannot find a way to get back up, it's just going to be a bad, bad season. And it affects guys in the bullpen. And people don't really think it does. But, I mean, I don't know for certain, because obviously I'm not a part of the Brewers. I wasn't in the clubhouse. But, I kind of speculate that, yeah, I think the reason why Axford struggled last year was because of the negativity in the bullpen. How bad they were doing. And it does happen. And it's created by this really unneeded pressure.
Right. And, we think Axford is doing poorly because we're considering the save a sacred thing. And, well, obviously coming into the ninth and getting what is essentially a hold is a good thing, right? But we put, we put an extra layer of importance on it by switching it up to a different, just the name of a different stat, with different guidelines around it. But, essentially his job is to go out there and throw strikes. He can't strike everybody out every single time. That's just not physically possible. The odds just are working against it. Essentially his job is to get them to make contact, keep it low, and get the easy outs. Sometimes that works, and sometimes they hit it on the screws,
Yeah, and it's just one of those things. You're either locked in or you're not. And, you can't really blame a guy for not being mentally locked in. They can do all they can to try to get to that point. But, it's just one of those things that happens. That's why you have hot and cold streaks. Some guys have it longer, some guys have it less, so.
Yeah, and that's one thing, like I said, maybe if Axford comes in the middle of the game or in the eighth inning, he's still doing essentially the same job. He just doesn't have, quote-unquote, the title of closer, which is not a real position. So, you know, a lot of it is just semantics, but it's the extra pressure that we put on it. And like I said, I think Axford is going to even out. Even last year when he was at his absolute, you know, objectively one of his absolute worst seasons, he still saved 35 games. So, yeah, it's safe to say that I'm not that worried about it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing, is you mentioned him coming in like maybe the 6th or 7th or 8th. He did that last year, and that seemed to really get him on track to where he ended up getting, I think, 15 saves in a row near the end of August into September.
Yeah, and you know, it's worth noting that down one run to the meat of the Rockies lineup is, or, you know, up one run to the meat of the Rockies lineup is a lot different than most save situations he's going to see, where you're facing 6-7-8 or 7-8-9 or even 8-9-1.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, don't invest too much stock into this right now. It's very early, people.
So. Right, and again, I mean, really, the tone of our whole conversation today has just been, it's early days, it's... And with this team, to be honest, it's never really time to panic. We saw a great push from them in the last half of the last season. We've seen great starts from this team again, and you know, they're going to string together good days. It's going to happen. They had really a couple bad days. And that's going to happen to even the best teams.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll see what happens with this series upcoming with Arizona, because it should be a pretty decent series. You have an Arizona team, much like the Brewers last year, who were trying to fight their way into the playoffs. They ended up 81-81 last year. But, I mean, they had Wade Miley, who, and they still do, I mean, it's not like they got rid of him or anything.
Right.
But, I mean, they had Wade Miley, who was really, I think, came second in the voting for NL Rookie of the Year. They picked up Brandon McCarthy. They have Ian Kennedy, who's doing still really well. So, I mean, this is a team that wasn't really focused on their pitching too much, but sort of came into it. And then they traded for Martin Prado. They brought in quite a few other bats, I believe, as well. They brought in Eric Chavez. They kept Jason Kubel. Saw Justin Upton go to the Braves, but, I mean, I'm not sure that's going to really affect them that much to where they're going to be out of contention anywhere. But, I mean, pitching-wise, I think the Diamondbacks have really focused more on that. They got Heath Bell. And, I mean, you look through their... Yeah, I mean, you really look through this bullpen in particular. I mean, you have Heath Bell, you have David Hernandez, you have J.J. Putz, you have Tony Sipp, Brad Ziegler. This is a pretty good bullpen.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the Brewers are going to have their hands full with this. I mean, yeah.
The Diamondbacks bullpen had their hands full yesterday, though, too.
Yeah, 15 innings against the Cardinals, and came back and they won that, Diamondbacks did. But, you know, Friday night's game, that's going to see the debut of Kyle Loesch for the Brewers. He'll go up against Wade Miley. Saturday will be Mike Fiers against Patrick Corbin, and then Sunday will be Yovani Gallardo versus Ian Kennedy. So pretty good matchups there.
Yeah, it's, I mean, again, there's still some, there's a lot of unknowns in this entire series. I mean, Yovani Gallardo usually bounces back from a poor performance, so I'm not too concerned about him, but obviously we haven't seen Loesch really pitch. He had one spring training appearance in an exhibition.
Yes.
Yeah, and then, I mean, that's it. And Mike Fiers still has to prove himself, but I think that's more to his benefit than to anything else.
Yeah, and the whole Kyle Loesch thing, it wasn't one of those things where when we signed him, I was like, what? I mean, you kind of knew it was coming to some team, and the Brewers had been in talks with him for a while now, so it wasn't really that much of a surprise.
Right.
But, you know, obviously, Loesch is coming off probably his best season in his career. So hopefully we can get a little bit more of that magic. I doubt we'll see him post ERA below 3. I assume he might get, you know, double-digit wins, maybe 12, 13. But, I mean, obviously the Brewers lose their first-round draft pick due to signing Loesch. But, I mean,
the Brewers have not had great luck with their first-round picks anyways in the last couple years. It's not like, I mean, Clint Coulter, we're going to get to see him play in Appleton this summer. Bradley and Youngman are developing a lot slower than anyone would have hoped. So it's, I mean, losing a first round draft pick in the major leagues isn't the end of the world.
No, because I was reading this article yesterday, and you consider that Giovanni Gallardo and Tyler Thornburg weren't even first round picks for us. They were later round picks.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not something huge for the Brewers. And I think the reaction to that as well was kind of really blown out of proportion. I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, it would have been nice to get Loesch maybe a year or two ago when he had his really good years. But I think for the most part, it was really blown out of proportion saying, oh, the Brewers, you know, really mucked this one up and blah, 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 blah. And I just, I mean, I don't really get it because, you know, just like 5 months ago, they were going so hard for Ryan Dempster, and everybody was so on board for getting Ryan Dempster. And now they come to Kyle Loesch, and they're like, oh, well, we don't want him. He's younger than Ryan Dempster.
and he doesn't tip his pitches.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, yeah, if you're thinking rationally, I mean, might it be a touch high to pay for him? Possibly. But he really was the best available, and there were a lot of questions in that rotation. I think a lot of people wanted, like, these young gun pitchers for the Brewers to just show up and start throwing lights out. But the rational mind would think, you know, let's get another veteran in here. And Kyle Loesch was, by leaps and bounds, the best available free agent starter.
Yeah, and I mean, would it have been nice to see Willie Peralta go 8 innings, give up 1 hit, no runs? Yeah, it'd be nice, but it's not going to happen. It might happen, but for the most part, it's not going to. I mean, you can't just expect, you know, Estrada, Peralta, and Fiers to be, you know, the next coming of Clayton Kershaw. It's not. It's just not going to happen. You know, through time, they will get better, but, you know, you need something else in that rotation, and they just weren't sure Chris Narvison was it, which I really honestly don't get taking him out of the rotation. I understand it was a precautionary thing with his arm, but the Brewers don't have any lefties in the rotation now.
Yeah, and that's... I can see how that would be troubling, you know, definitely, but at the end of the day, you got to go with the best arms you have, and I mean, that's where the Brewers are. Do I think Narvison's going to be in the pen for the entire season? No. We're going to have switch-ups for sure. But for now, I'm not thoroughly concerned about not having a lefty in the lineup, or in the rotation, rather, because we have some good left-handed arms in the pen. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know really how much one left-handed starter in the rotation is going to affect the entire course of a season.
No, and it's really hard to tell because it's just, it's one of those things that if injury happens, if a slump happens, then you have to put them in there. But, you know, until the time being, it's just really an experiment. And April is that experiment month that the Brewers can test around and see what works and what doesn't. So,
right.
So that way they can get focused in and say, okay, yeah, he can be long relief, he can be a starter, and blah, 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 get that all pictured in, penciled in, all nice and pretty, and then we can go from there. But until then, you know, it may be a rotation without Narvison, it may be a rotation with Narvison, it may be a rotation without Fiers, or who knows.
I think, at the end of the day, remember, you have three people in that bullpen who can take over spot starting if need be, in Gorzolani, Figueroa, and Narvison. So it's not as if we're without any backup plans.
Oh, and Kinsler, too. Brandon Kinsler.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think in that spot, though, I'm pretty sure Narvison would be the favorite, probably followed by Gorzolani due to them being left-handed. But, I mean, Kinsler started before. Figueroa would be interesting because he's had time before in the majors. Not too much. A little bit with Detroit. But, no, I mean, the Brewers do have fallback options, and it's not like Loesch destroys all of them. It's just, it's a help, but a lot of people don't see it as a help. They see it as unnecessary. So,
right.
It's a little hard to, you know, draw the line as to where, if it's good or bad. We'll see. Personally, I don't think it matters anymore. What matters is that he's on the team, and that we support him.
Right. So. Yeah, and people will come around to that too. And most of the fans who, you know, have these kind of reactions to Kyle Loesch or to John Axford or to, you know, anyone else that's doing poor, maybe with the exception of Yanezki Betancourt. Because really, that's a completely different topic that we're not getting into. But
don't have the time or the mind power to lose.
Right. But, you know, in most of those situations, those aren't the people that really know what they're looking at in terms of a long-term run. And at the end of the day, when you're talking about baseball, you're talking about you have to speak in the long term. Three games does not a season make, certainly, and one start does not a pitcher make. So, you know, it's easy to get that really visceral gut reaction, like, oh, I hate this idea, or oh, I hate that player, or, oh, that was a terrible game, and this guy lost it for us. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's not really the case.
Not at all, because, you know, it's a very, very long season.
Right, until you're that second wild card team, or one of those two wild card teams, and you have that one game play-in. One game doesn't make the course of a season.
Not at all. One last topic we want to get into before we get into the player and or hitter and pitcher of the week is this little article I came upon on ESPN. It's from ESPN, the magazine. And they have different categories, you know, which player do you think would be a breakout star, which team is the hottest mess in baseball. And then they come across one. Who is the last player you'd ever want to add to your clubhouse? And two pitchers responded. One's an NL pitcher and another one's an AL slugger. Both anonymous. The NL pitcher said, I'd go with A-Rod, and I love saying it. For the money he makes, he brings nothing but headaches. I don't know who else could be in the conversation. End quote. You know, there are three players that were voted on the most. A-Rod got 28.4% of the vote. AJ Pierzynski got 14.9%, which I really don't understand. And then Ryan Braun got 10.8%. And the ESPN worded it as a surprising 10.8% select Brewers star Ryan Braun. And AL Slugger went on to say, nobody likes Braun. He cheated, and the only reason he got off is that the old owner of the team is the commissioner, end quote.
Well, a couple things on this. First off, I think we can feel pretty confident that the AL Slugger mentioned wasn't Prince Fielder.
Yeah.
But, you know, in a more serious note, Sports Illustrated and ESPN, the magazine specifically, love doing this, where they have players speak on anonymity on quote-unquote hot topics in their sport. And it is just the dumbest thing ever. It really is. It, number one, it's not a real conversation. You know? Number two, as much as we'd like to believe, most Major League Baseball players don't have the same pulse on the game that they think they have. You know? Just because you're part of an institution doesn't mean you actually understand the ins and outs of it. And probably most people that speak on anonymity in the, you know, in these types of interviews aren't the type of people you'd want to be speaking publicly anyways. That is to say that, you know, big name people probably aren't going to say anything like that in the first place. It's more people looking for their moment and, you know, looking to get an edge in on publicity and, you know, in their careers basically. But it serves no purpose, and I mean, really, it's just a really dumb thing to do, because if you're not willing to say something like that publicly, you're doing a disservice to yourself, you're doing a disservice to Braun, certainly, and you're doing a disservice to the situation that baseball is in at the time.
Yeah, because it's really unnecessary, honestly. I mean, obviously there's a lot of really ill feelings towards Braun in the past, really, year and a half, going on 2 years, whether that be through fans or other players. But, you know, just to keep fueling the fire really doesn't help anything. It doesn't solve anything. It just brings up more controversy, more arguments, more headaches. And, I don't know, it just, obviously the media needs a story to talk about, and this would be one of them, but it just feels like at some point they're just kind of digging for it. It just feels like they're trying to create something that really isn't there.
Well, yeah, it's sensationalism, to be I mean, to be perfectly honest about the situation, it doesn't, there's no journalistic, you know, integrity to it in the first part, and there's no real, I mean, it's not a story at that point if you're just grabbing a whole bunch of players and saying, oh, who do you hate the most? I don't even know specifically why you make the decision to do something like that, but it's something that's worked for, like I said, Sports Illustrated and ESPN for years and years and years. People seem to like it. They like that kind of, in, you know, to use a lame pun, they like the inside baseball kind of, you know, kind of feel to it. But, you know, there's dozens and dozens of players that are linked to the Biogenesis papers. There are probably 20 or 30 more that have rumors flying around inside of MLB's, you know, front offices. So to make a claim like that about a situation of which, you know, you probably have no understanding of what that actually entails is just a dumb, immature kind of thing to do.
It really is. And just, it's not going to go away, obviously, but, you know, it's just one of those things you look on, you go, come on, man. So for our last segment today, we're going to have our hitter and really pitcher of the Rocky series. So, Colin, you're up. Who is your hitter of the Rocky series?
You know, there's a couple people that can really be thrown around here, but I'm going to say, just because he's breaking all the molds for his career right now, I'm going to say Aramis Ramirez.
Yeah, you know, obviously, 3 doubles in 3 games, very impressive. You know, he's on track to get that 50 again. At least we'd hope.
He's on pace for like 1,000 right now.
You know, I'm going to have to, you know, I was thinking about picking Ramirez, but I had to pick somebody else just because of what really kind of what he went through last year and the fact that he's just been on an absolute tear. He only struck out once, walked twice, and that would be Ricky Weeks.
Impressive discipline from Weeks.
545 batting average. Obviously, that's going to go down. I mean, obviously, he's not going to bat 545 for this season. Nobody does. But, you know, 6 hits and 13 trips to the plate. Or no, 11 trips to the plate because I can't do math. 1 stolen base, 1 strikeout, 2 walks, 1 RBI, 1 home run, 1 double. You know, really, what we saw to Ricky Weeks last year wasn't one of his greater years. And, you know, obviously, you know, you and I both agree that we think he's grossly overpaid. But, you know, if he can at least play for at least, like, he's worth half of it, then, yeah, he's going to start getting this award a little bit more.
Yeah, and hopefully we're seeing a more balanced approach at the plate from him and more discipline. And at the end of the day, I mean, him staying healthy is going to be going to be the best case scenario for him. Kind of goes without saying, but the more, you know, if he can stay healthy and keep that disciplined approach at the plate, he's going to have a monster season.
That is very true. And, you know, hopefully for not the benefit of these awards, but for the benefit of the team, you know, it doesn't just leave the load up to Ryan Braun and Aramis Ramirez and Jonathan Lucroy to carry by themselves. You know, Ricky Weeks steps in as well. So,
right. I'm sure they all wait with bated breath in the clubhouse to find out who our player and pitcher are. So I think they're playing for that.
Oh, you know, they have to be. I've heard Gene Segura's, you know, been pumping the iron lately and trying to get onto it.
But, yeah, he might get there eventually.
Yeah. So Colin, who's your pitcher of the series?
I think it goes without question that it goes to Figueroa, personally. He came out last guy to get the job, and, I mean, really proving why he should have been on that roster for the entire series. Just a tremendous job from him.
Yeah, I have to agree. Figueroa is my pitcher as well. Almost 4 innings pitched, 3 and a third right now, 4 strikeouts, no walks, only 2 hits, no runs. Yeah, it's really impressive because when it came down to who was going to be on the 25-man, it came between Figueroa and Chris Davis. And, you know, obviously the Brewers, you know, trying to look for every way, shape, and form to avoid last year's catastrophe of the bullpen. And who knows, Figueroa might be a part of that. He's had some prior experience, like I said before, with Detroit, not too much. But, you know, obviously, if he can come in and just shut people down like he's been doing, yeah, he's going to obviously A, earn his spot, you know, on the roster going forward, and B, show that he can be a huge part of this bullpen.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously we hope the good performances continue, although it's going to be interesting to see when he comes in higher pressure situations, how he performs. But for now, I think his mix of starting experience and bullpen experience is doing really well in terms of the way he's approaching batters and mixing his pitches.
Yeah, because that's huge, because if the Brewers get stuck in that same rut that they were last year, then they're just done. But, you know, Figueroa, he can definitely help try and break the bullpen out of that mold a little bit. I'm not saying he's going to take the bullpen by the horns and lead them to the promised land, which would be the playoffs. But, you know, he can definitely help the cause a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, guys, that's it for the first episode of Season 2. Stay tuned for next week when we have the second episode.
All right, we'll see you next week.